Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ath Geeks podcast, the show where athletes and geeks collide. I just want to thank y'all all for tuning in and making this a part of your weekly routine. Anyways, I'm Adrian, that's Spells. And how you doing today, Spells? You took a week off, so I need to know. I need to check in. How you doing?
I got sick during my week off, so I might cough and sniffle during this pod. But, you know, I'm still living. I don't think it's the coronavirus, so that's a blessing. But the real is back. The veil is back. Flo Bananas Pilled is back, nigga. We still alive. Still top three rappers, dead or alive. Debate your mama.
I don't know what that was, but anyway. Oh man, speaking of rappers though, that's what we jumping into. That's how we're starting off today. So you peeped the new Cole, right?
That's what that whole intro was about, man. See, you're not really a real Cole fan.
I wasn't even listening to you. I'm not even gonna lie to you.
Well, that's your first mistake.
Well, what's your thoughts on the Cole?
Still not better than Born Sinner, but a good album. Like, I wasn't like, damn, he spent all this time to give us this. And I was really impressed that he gave us features. I think it's the first album in a long time that he gave. I think it's like maybe the last two albums he didn't have features on. So it was good to see him, like, heavy emphasis, have a Cam'ron appearance, have a little bit, have a little baby, I guess J. Cole 4PF now. Shit. He had somebody else on there. I was like, damn.
He had 21 on it.
Yeah, 21. 21 was on there. He kind of owed 21, though, because he hopped on 21 shit a while back. So I figured he'd be on that shit. And then
21 out-rapped him on that song, too.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he did.
No, he didn't. J. Cole has probably been in peril of being out-rapped less than 5 times. And, like, that was by, like, GOATs, like Jay-Z on bullshit songs and, like, Nas. 21 did not out-rap. You see, you don't got your hotel cap on and you don't got your listening ears on, man. You got.
I do. I definitely feel like on those two songs that he had, Baby and 21 on, that on those songs, they had better verses than Cole on those.
So Baby probably, so I didn't, I only heard the one with him and Baby one time. Only ran the album through twice.
Through 3 times. Like, you only caught the Baby the first time. Once. Oh, see, yeah, you got to go to a third time. You hit, you know, the first time you just get a, like, you know, you get a raw feel for you, but okay, some things point out, some things don't. You just be like, okay, cool. That second time you really be listening, and then that third time you take that deep dive in. And the first time I was like, okay, this is cool. Second time I was like, all right, I rock with that 21. I rocked with the Baby, and I was like, okay. I like the Baby was like, you know, he like little Baby cool, so I rocked with that. And the third time I was like, yeah, this album solid, but I posted some things talking about this, I'm not really feeling it. And some of my homies, one of my homegirls hit me up. They saw me posting. They saw, because I was ranting about it. They hit me up and they were like, what are you talking about? Like, we haven't even finished the album, but we 7 songs in and it's heat, blah, 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 X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, I was saying I'm not feeling it and this not it, but I wasn't saying it because of, like, it was bad. Like, it was cool. I said, it's solid, but I'm not feeling anything. You know what I mean by that? You know, when you normally listen to that Cole, you know, like, I'm talking like old school Cole, like 07, 08, 09, 10, like Cole, you know, you feel some, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I think people keep checking for the Cole pre-Born Sinner, pre-Forest Hill Drive. They checking for, like, the get up and the warm up J. Cole, the Friday Night Lights J. Cole. But people don't realize that that wasn't even his final form. You know what I mean?
He changed a lot.
He dropped at a way more consistent rate than his peers at his level. You know, he put out more, I want to say more music, but he just gave more. Like, J. Cole was producing at a high level, like an elite level rapper, as an elite level rapper, like from the jump. Like, some of his best work was not an album. You know what I'm saying? Friday Night Lights is probably, after Born Center, one of his best projects ever. You know,
yeah, Wale, most of them are like songs or mixtapes.
You know? Wale can't say that. Drake is probably the only rapper, because Kendrick can't say that either, because Kendrick mixtapes were good, but they weren't Friday Night Lights or fuck, I'm blanking. Drake's mixtape, So Far Gone. It wasn't So Far Gone. So, you know, J. Cole, he's been at that tippity top, but the difference between him and Drake and even Kendrick is the fact that he continued getting better as a rapper. Drake has gotten better as an artist. Like, his bars have not, like, wowed me any more than his old bars did. He could always rap really, really well. But Cole is just, you know, the different flows and still remaining true to himself and the subject matter.
I guess in the subject matter, but not with the flow. Like, I'm not rocking with the new flows, because it feels like he's doing the same thing, like kind of how like Drake does. Like, they conform to whatever is hot right now. You know, they go into the like the mainstream rap. They're not really sticking to, in my view, they're not really sticking to themselves. That's why I was saying it wasn't it, because they're not sticking to. I was expecting that old Cole, but then I'm sounding like he's sounding like he's trying to make radio music.
It was Amari, I think, was the song, where he kind of adopted like a little, what we would call a mumble rap flow, but the subject matter was the same. You know what I'm saying? He always talked about
niggas. But like I said, I'm not saying nothing about the subject. I'm talking about the flow. The flow but is so, what I said. Like,
all right, that's like going mainstream. Do you not want him to conform? Like, you want him to stay doing shit that people don't listen to no more?
Well, whenever I think of Cole, and I'm like, okay, this is what I'm trying to go to. When I go to Cole for a certain thing, like, I'm like, when I
so LeBron should have never got a jumper, is what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying he should never got a jumper.
I'm not.
I promise you, I'm not. I said the album's still solid. It's still solid.
When he conformed to what the mainstream rappers were doing, did he do it better than the mainstream rappers were doing?
Nah,
he took the flow and then he inserted it.
I listened to it three times. I listened to it one time on my way to work, and then I finished on my way to work and everything. Listened to it a second time at work. Listened to it when I came home. And I listened to it three. I don't feel anything. When you hit that music, you be like, dang, yeah. They really speaking, they talking, they doing X, Y, and Z. You feeling it. I listened to it. I was like, damn, I'm not feeling nothing.
I made an ugly face in the first song.
Man, like I said, when I first listened to it, I was like, okay, whatever. But I'm not saying like the music not good. I'm saying it doesn't, I don't feel anything. I didn't feel anything listening to it. I wasn't really rocking with it he didn't hit my soul. I don't know how to explain. It wasn't like cold to me.
Okay, go ahead. Finish your point.
No, I was about to say. So, cause I was talking to some cats at work, and they were like I said, like I told my homies and my homegirl, they were texting me talking about like I'm hating. They said the same thing. I'm hating. They don't exist. And I'm like, I'm just not feeling it. I talked to some other people, and then they were like, yeah, we see what you're talking about with the more mainstream thing. They're like, they're not really rocking with that either. They want the old school code. So I see both sides. I'm still going to rock with it because, like I said, it's solid. It's still cool. It's still good to listen. But I'm not trying to... People hyping it up like this, it's all this. But I'm like, it's really not that great to me, because if it can't make me feel nothing, I'm not rocking with it like that.
Had to give that a moment of silence because I just... All respect I have for you just died.
For what?
Hey, man, it's all right. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
What you mean?
It wasn't for you. I get it. Good music, bars, you know, substance, good flow.
Bro, get the hell out of here. What you talking about?
I get it. Good music ain't for you. That's fine. Let me ask you this. Let me bounce this off you. So did you see the graphic? He's posted it like three times where like he has like the notebook. And he pretty much pinned out like his plan for like releases. So he did the Revenge of the Dreamer shit earlier. And then, you know, he dropped the off season, which was what he just dropped now. Then his next project is supposed to be It's a Boy. And then the third one's supposed to be The Fall Off, which is supposed to be like his last album. Do you think he already has those other two albums done? And like this was just like a warm up?
I can see one album being done and him just holding off on it, because with the rap game, you know, being so constant with changing and him still trying to be current and everything else, he's going to match whatever they do. I don't think he would go two albums ahead, because I feel like that's giving it too much time for something else, like a somebody else to pop up in the rap game. And then like we change the flow, what's the mainstream rappers doing now?
I don't think he's trying to be current. I think he just bullshitting. Like, I think he probably wrote this album in the span of a month. No bullshit. He probably wrote the album in a month. And then spend another couple months just fine-tuning and mastering it or some shit. Maybe trying to get the features together and see what sounds better with what song. But, like, I don't think it's a struggle for him to remain relevant in the mainstream. I just think it's, like, a sportsmanship thing. Like, he like, oh, this is what you little niggas like? All right, cool. Let me show the little niggas do it at an old nigga style. Like, he's playing. I don't even think this is his best effort. And that's not because the music doesn't sound like it. It's just... I know how Cole sounds, and I know how he has a good ear for music. So if he wants something to sound like him, he's going to make it sound like him. He knows that mumble rap shit don't sound like him. So
exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, you say he know he got that ear for music, and you say you agree he's bullshitting. So I'm like, if he's bullshitting, that's why I'm saying it's not slapping to me.
No. Like, he's bullshitting as in like how Larry Bird used to bullshit with niggas. Before he dropped 50, and he would just tell like, yo, I'm about to drop 50. He's still dropping 50 on your head. You know what I mean? It's what they call a light 50, as the kids say it. You know what I'm saying? It just comes off easy for him. He's bullshitting. This album wasn't important to him. Like, if someone said this shit was trash to his face, he probably wouldn't care. But it still slaps.
It's solid. Oh, I'm not saying slap. It's solid. You can take that deep breath off you. This shit's solid. That's all I can say.
So I asked you that question earlier because I have this theory that he's going to drop at least another album before the year's over.
Okay.
And I really want to get crazy and say he's going to do two, but I think he's going to just drop one more. Like, the It's the Boy title sounds like, because you know, the off season, if you think about, like, because he does like a basketball analogy with most of his albums and shit. Because he went the Get Up, the Warm Up, Friday Night Lights, all three sports basketball centric. Then he went Sideline Story for his debut. Then he skipped it for like Born Center. So he's, you know, he went away from that basketball shit. But now with the off season, once again, you know, a basketball centric theme where you spend, like, what do basketball players do in the off season? They spend their summer refining their game, working on their game, doing different shit, aka mumble rap.
Just adding. I'm not saying. Let me finish.
You know, so that just seems like he's trying to bring some finality to his career. And I think with the It's the Boy title, he's probably gonna be talking about the birth of his son, if he has a son. I think he does. I don't really care if he does or not. So that's probably gonna be a little bit more introspective, personal, Cole. Instead of the, you know, the struggling to stay mainstream shit that you think he's doing. So I could see.
I didn't say struggling to stay mainstream. I said, I just felt like that's where he was trying to go with this. He was trying to fit in with the norm. Like, I can see what you're talking about, but like, he just trying to show like old school come new school. Like, he was just like, hey, I am that nigga. I can do what y'all do too. This is y'all. I feel like, cause you know, there was a lot of slander. If you go, you on social media, there's a lot of slander about Cole, talking about nobody wants to listen to Cole, boring, X, Y, and Z. You know, you remember that time when Cole had all that hate?
Just like Wale used to get hate, but they both solid ass lyrical.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're not solid. I'm saying, like, I think he took from that saying, like, oh, y'all saying I'm boring, I can't do this, and I can't do this, and your favorite rapper better than me. Then we drop this. He tries to go mainstream just to show you he can do it. And I didn't say the album, but the album is solid. I'm just not feeling it because I was hoping for old Cole. I got mainstream Cole. I didn't really feel anything. Maybe if I would have went into the album with a more open like mind, maybe I was like, I didn't have no expectations. It would have been better. But my expectations for it, where I wanted it to where it was and where it hit, I'm like, eh, it's solid. So that's all I'm saying. Like, maybe he was going, maybe you're right. He doing that old school, new school thing.
You know what's triggering me? It's just using the word try. It's actually using the word try. Because he's doing it. He's not trying shit. He's just doing it. But I digress. You know, my fists are clenched.
They go, they clench like Arthur when they get hot.
Hell yeah.
Over me. I'm not even saying nothing like to disrespect. I respect Cole. I'm just saying, I don't like a lot of that mainstream shit that comes out here. Man, I'm cussing a lot this episode. We're gonna have to mark this one as explicit this episode. We don't ever have explicit. This is gonna be an explicit episode.
Every episode I'm on is explicit.
But yeah, I gotta stop drinking while we do these recordings because I start I start cussing too freely. I don't even remember what we were talking about because I started saying that.
You are wrapping up your hate for J. Cole, but I'll wrap it up for you, man. J. Cole is the best artist out right now. Are you other rappers too pussy to drop first? Kendrick, Drake, I'm talking to you. J. Cole dropped first. May, my birthday weekend. He did it. Your turn.
Yo.
Drake, you realize Drake owed us an album in fucking January, and it's May right now? And he used a little excuse that he broke his leg as an excuse to not drop that shit. But he also broke his leg in like December or January. The album should have been done.
Did you listen? Hey, did you listen to his verse on that Nicki? That first Nicki song? Or what was it? Second song? No, it was the first song of her album.
Of course I did. I'm OVO Hive, man. Of course I did.
Yeah. So when he was talking about this is not my first time carrying him while on two crutches, I didn't know if he was talking about with him breaking his leg or him carrying Nicki and Lil Wayne on that song.
You know what he was talking about.
What do you mean?
He was carrying them two on that song, man.
Yeah, that's what I was like. Hold on.
Let's have an honest conversation about Nicki Minaj, man. Can we have an honest conversation?
Yeah.
I know that this is a podcast and the platform's intent is to respect women. So I missed last week's episode. So let me first off start by saying happy belated Mother's Day to all my queens out there. I hope that you got the weekend you deserved. I know I spent my weekend giving my wife everything that I could and everything that she deserved. Happy Mother's Day to you too as well, Nicki Minaj, if you hear this. But you should have stayed retired.
Hey, you're not wrong. She should. I was like, when I first saw, I didn't even know about the album until you said. Didn't know anything about a Nicki album until you said so.
So here's what gets me. It's not even really an album. She's
a mixtape type deal.
Nicki Minaj is about her money. So I will never take away from her business acumen or even her ability to rap. You know what I'm saying? She can rap. But here's where the issue comes for me. And this is bear with me. Feel free to jump in whenever you want because I can get long winded with this. And this might be a tricky. I might get us canceled, you know? So, you know, have your foot in the button. Don't be scared to mute me. She repackaged the old mixtape, which was highly successful when it came out, like in like 2009. And then she dropped three new songs on it. So essentially what she did was she made a deluxe version of a mixtape. Cool. I don't mind. Get your money, sis. That's fine. But what pisses me off is, how do I say this? What else sound sexist? All right. You were supposed to be retired. And like the purpose on retiring, according to you, was to like focus on your family. You gave all you can to the game, blah, blah, blah. And then you peek your head out. You know, you peek your head out, give us a little bar. But when you give us your bar, you do it with a rat with Tekashi 6ix9ine. So that shit's not even honorable. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's not even like, I can't even respect it. I can't make myself listen to it. And then
I just saw that like music video. I saw people
had a titties out and all that.
Yeah, and I didn't listen to the song. I never listened to this. I still haven't listened to the song.
All that. And then the very next time I hear your voice, because I don't check for Nicki like that. So it's this weekend. and you throwing shots at, like, you know, Cardi and Meg, which is cool because rap is a competitive sport and stuff like that. But neither one of them have been checking for you because you've been retired. And so it becomes just like narcissism. Like, you have to make yourself a victim or make yourself a bad guy, as you proclaim.
To she like, did say that in the album. She said the bad guy has to whatever.
Yeah, but don't nobody give a fuck about you. You send a shot at a stripper who don't write her own verses and a legit lyricist that's on the hiatus right now for mental health reasons. And now you pick your time. Nah, you didn't come out with this shit when they were both hot. Excuse me, I need to drink some water. Go ahead and tell what you think while I try and hydrate myself.
Well, like I said, I didn't even know Nicki had an album until you told me. You texted me with like, hey, let's talk about the Nicki on the show. And I said, Nicki dropped? I said, like, I was confused. I was like, what are you talking about? You're like, we gotta talk about Nicki. I was like, well, like, what'd she do? Like, is there some news? Like, did she like get in the fight? I'm confused.
And another thing.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm back. So like Nicki. This isn't about Nicki, it's about her fans, bro. If you a Barb, hit me up at Heart of the City. The E in Heart of the City is spelt with a 3. She not top 5. And she not top 10. And I'm not talking about women rappers. Because here on the AfGeeks podcast, we believe in the quality. And that means I want the women rappers in there with the men rappers. So as a rapper, she's not top 5. She's not top 10. She might not be top 25. And I'm just here to tell y'all that right now. So who the fuck does she think she is that I even give a fuck that she unretired on a Friday night / Saturday morning to give us 3 new songs on an 09 mixtape like she the shit? Fuck you, Nicki Minaj. Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah. Well, okay. All right. So I'm going to go back to what I was saying about you told me about the Nicki. I didn't even listen to the whole album. I'm not going to listen to the whole album. I ain't listened to Nicki Minaj since like 2013, 2004. I haven't like legit listened to her since like 2013, 2014. Whenever she dropped High School, whenever her and Wayne dropped High School, that was the last legit time I listened to Nicki Minaj. I don't know what year that was, but that was early 2010s, like somewhere around there. I remember I was in high school when she dropped that. That's the only reason it was relevant to me. When she dropped that. So I'm not going to sit here and act like I listen to Nicki. I know X, Y, and Z, all these things. Only time I ever saw Nicki was when in drama. I saw her with the Miley Cyrus beef. I saw her with the Cardi B beef. I saw her with all these things. And I see the slander of Nicki Minaj or the fangirls of Nicki Minaj. I see both sides.
But do you see the trend? You see how
Nicki... Yeah, that she goes out of her way to try to start some beef to keep her relevant. And you know what pisses me off about Nicki, though? Cause we need to get down to this. Hold up. Cause like I said, I don't even listen to Nicki, but
hell yeah.
Anytime, like I was saying, the people that she does point at, you don't ever see her going after any niggas or anything. No. She always tries to bring down another female artist in the game. She acts like she reminds me of kind of like a Shaquille O'Neal. Not everybody can eat. Not everybody, you feel like you can't, everybody can't eat.
And she exists in a different, too. She exists in a different space than the rest of these female rappers. Like she's literally one of, like, when I was talking about like the top 5, top whatever list, that was just pure lyrical ability. In terms of appeal and pop and who people want to see, like she's up there with the Drakes and the Beyoncés and the Lil Waynes, you know what I'm saying? Like she can pack out arenas anywhere the fuck she goes. These other rappers, male or female, cannot do that. So there's not even like they hurting her money, you know what I'm saying? So like this hate that she displays seemingly towards other female artists is just vanity based, and that really throws me the fuck off. Because
because it's like you should want them to eat. You should want those female, especially because you talk about being pro woman and everything like that, and you're talking about all these things with women, right? You know how hard it is in the game, especially for a female artist. You know how hard it is to be in that game, and for you to bring down another female artist or to try to start a beef that because they're eating, not even because you have a real problem with them, just because they're eating. And you feel like that's going to take away from you eating and only you can eat? That's a problem because you talking, but your actions don't, like, match your words. You talking about you want these other females to eat. You want to, like, all these women things, women this, that, and everything else. Like, but you don't really want them to eat because the second they start eating, you start causing a problem with
them. You know how I know she don't? But you look at all these other rappers who put themselves at the pinnacle of rap. dog, I might not make it. They portray themselves as CEOs. Lil Wayne, signed Drake, signed Nicki, signed Tiger, made Young Money. Jay-Z got Kanye, you got Cameron, you know what I'm saying? You got Rockefeller size Rock Nation from that. Jay-Z eventually signed J. Cole. Kendrick Lamar, while he did not sign artists, he was part of a collective that still rock with each other to this day. And he gives his features to younger artists in that collective, slash Isaiah Rizzard, Schoolboy Q, Absol, J-Rock. You know what I'm saying? You see the trend with these rap legends where they just give back. And, you know, Kanye West, Big Sean, he gave us Big Sean, he gave us 2 Chainz, he gave us Pusha T. He didn't give us Pusha T, but Pusha T signed to him. You see they grow their family tree, you know? What artists had Nicki Minaj sign? What female artist had Nicki Minaj promoted other than herself? Don't worry, I'll wait.
Talk about it.
I'll wait. Can't name one, right? I wonder why that is. Come on, man. Let's take a break. And we're back. You had a good break, man?
Yeah, it was straight. You know, finished my drink, sitting here, chilling.
Feeling drowsy?
I am, actually. I'm old. I can't drink like that no more. I just pour 2 shots in. I'm out.
What are you, like 24?
Yeah.
You're too young to be having weird to go to sleep after a cup, man. All right, though, but let's dive right into this. The world of boxing, man. We didn't get to talk about the Canelo fight last weekend because I was absent. That's on me. Did you watch the fight?
I did watch the fight. I watched the fight. I made sure this is like the first actual fight I've actually just went out of my way to watch. The only other fight I've only seen 3 fights in my life. This fight, the what's it called, Floyd versus McGregor fight, and Floyd versus Pacquiao. I only saw those other 2 because the Floyd Pacquiao was because my uncle had a big watch party, so my mom and them went over there. So I went over there. Of course, I got to go over there with them. Then the second one was the
McGregor.
Yeah, the McGregor one. And that was when I was over there at Tyndall. Were you over there at Bice's house?
No, I was actually at my wife's family's house.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Bice had this big party. So all like the CSTs, all like the people from the comms squad, like a bunch of like people went over there and we all watched the fight there. And I was
damn,
like,
okay, I missed cool. that invite.
Yeah, we all were just over there chilling. We were all just watching, drinking, chilling, doing everything like that. And then now, this fight, because you told me to watch this fight, because you asked me about it. I was like, I don't really watch boxing. I don't know nothing about boxing. You said, peep the fight. I peeped the fight. I was watching it. I was very confused because when I see a fight, I see the boxing. Like, that's the thing. I don't really understand the whole boxing aspect. I understand it, but I don't at the same time. Like, I took kickboxing for, like, 6 months and everything. Mm-hmm. And, like, I tried it out. It was cool and everything. But, actually, like, just going through the training and everything. Because we sparred and everything. But actually seeing, like, legit pros do it. And seeing all the, like, the dodging and what doesn't really consider, not really count as a hit. And everything, watching them score and everything. I was kind of confused on the scoring. Yeah. I was watching it, but I was trying to. They mentioned the score and they mentioned stuff like that throughout. And I'd be like, how do they get points for that? How's that counting? How's that? And I was like, I was more focused on the scoring than the actual fight.
That's a great point. So that leads me to 2 points. First off, whenever you listen to the announcers, so like normally when you get scores, like in the midst of a fight, it's the announcer's card, right? And so how accurate that score is just depends on like how jaded that announcer is and how well he knows, how well he's seeing the fight. So generally when you score a boxing card, then you can do it yourself at home and be pretty accurate if you follow like these 3 parameters. Excuse me. The pace, meaning who's being the aggressor, what they call a ring generalship. So who's using the ring to their advantage, who's up against the ropes all the time, or who's pushing, who's controlling the ring. And then like it's a mix between accuracy and like power punches. And those two can be like interchangeable depending on who the judge is. And so most people use like those three, you know, the pace, when you got Tivity, the ring, ring generalship, and then like, you know, landing and like the effectiveness of punches, they use those to score. And so when it's objective, obviously. So sometimes you get like a really wide scorecard if the fight is close, because some of those rounds can go either way, depending on whether you favor like power sharks or whether you like favor someone pumping out the jab a lot and is landing accurate punches and controlling the fight that way. So it's sometimes it's really hard in a good fight to score it because you don't know what the judges are doing. That fight I thought was pretty easy to score. Like it went 8 rounds. It ended before the ninth round came out. I heard some judges give it like score it 4-4. I probably would have gave it. It probably would have been like more of a 5-3 one for me. Canelo definitely took 2 rounds off where he wasn't like really. It was a good fight, man. Billy Joe Saunders, he used his jab really effectively. He's really quick, quicker than Canelo was expecting. And it was hard for Canelo. Because you saw early in the fight, Canelo was like walking him down and like landing a lot of power shots to the body. And he wasn't really scared of Joe Saunders' power. But then like Billy Joe Saunders did some weird shit, where he just kind of switched up the rhythm, but he was throwing out his jabs, throw some hooks in there and shit. I mean, it was an even fight, bro, but Canelo's power was just the equalizer, man. The uppercut that broke that dude's face, I mean, ended the fight.
Couldn't even open his eye.
Couldn't open his eye. That shit closed, like, immediately. But the scoring shit, man, it could have ended real bad for Canelo if they were going to keep getting scored that way. Because when he broke that dude's face, he probably won that round anyway, but you could tell the other dude was gaining like some confidence. In a championship level fight, you don't want like the other fighter to gain confidence, because if they're not scared of your punches, then like everything you're doing doesn't work. Like your punches have to stop somebody from doing what they want to do. That's how you get the upper hand in boxing, in my opinion. But Canelo would have knocked his ass out anyway. He was doing good work to the body. That's why that uppercut was open, because that dude's elbows were in, which meant his gloves were like not tucked tight to his face. He stayed ducking. Like he was set him up for like the first round. Like Billy Joe Saunders kept ducking. And Canelo kept on the uppercut and he kept missing until he didn't. That was all she wrote. But I'm not really here to talk about Billy Joe Saunders, man. So you saw that fight. That fight looked pretty close, right?
Yeah, it looked like that's what I was confused about, because a lot of people, when I was going into it, when I talked to you, I talked to a lot of other people. Everybody was talking about Canelo this, Canelo that. So I was expecting Canelo to go in there and dominate, because that's I don't know much about him. Like I said, I told you like the mm-hmm. I've only seen 3 fights in my life. This is my 3rd fight. So I was like, okay, so Canelo's going to do X, Y, and Z. Everybody's talking about him. Everybody's hyping him up. So I'm going to go in there and I'm going to see. And people weren't talking about like his strategy and him being a defense fighter. They were talking about like what you just said, like how he was strong. Like they were talking about his power and his knockout ability. And they were talking about like, people made it seem like he was going to go in there and dominate. So I was like, okay. I went in there, and then I was confused watching. And I was like, this fight looks pretty close. Yeah. People are telling me he's supposed to go in there and dominate and just overpower him. And it didn't look like it. Look, you could always tell Canelo looked like he was confident just by how he was moving, how he was walking, how he was just, you know, his demeanor. It looked like he was always confident,
right?
Like throughout the whole fight, he wasn't really like spooked or worried about losing. Mm-hmm. But it still, just from a novice's perspective, it still looked like it was a close fight, and it didn't look like he dominated the way people made it seem like he was going to dominate.
Yeah, so I'll say this on that point real quick. So the difference in Canelo always had control of that fight. He may have lost some rounds, but that wasn't really, it wasn't because he was doing anything wrong. It's just because Billy Joe Saunders was being crafty. But the difference in between Canelo and Billy Joe Saunders in that fight, and the reason why I say that he controlled that whole fight, is Billy Joe Saunders' punches did not hurt Canelo. Like there wasn't a point where Canelo was not coming forward. And that's why you didn't see like a lot of the defensive prowess and like a lot of Floyd Mayweather-ish type mannerisms, because there was no need. There was no no fear of like being knocked out because you were coming in wrong. You were just only scared of like losing points in the round. So, but when you see Billy Joe Saunders approach Canelo, like anytime Canelo dug down to that body, Billy Joe Saunders was backing his ass up. Anytime Canelo hit him with a straight right, Billy Joe Saunders was backing that ass up. And that power, the difference in power, and Canelo's pretty fast too, just earned the respect of Billy Joe Saunders, but that respect wasn't earned from Canelo. So it's like, I don't know, man. The more you watch boxing, the more you can just kind of tell. The demeanor tells you a lot about how the fight is going. So even though scorecards say one thing, you can tell at the end of the day who's going to win that fight. And I mean, shit happens. Like, people get like caught slipping and get knocked out. It happens to the best of them. But barring that, Canelo was going to win that fight by decision if he didn't knock him out, just because he would have figured that shit out. And if worst come to worst, like I said, the punches from Billy Joe Saunders didn't hurt. So Canelo would have just, I guess, ate him and just did some work to the body. But I really asked you that because that fight was close. And everybody says Canelo's in his prime. But before this fight, Canelo said in his prime, he would beat Floyd Mayweather. And I'm here to tell you, I watched the film and that shit is a lie. because this is another reason that fight looked closer than it should have. Canelo struggles with southpaws and boxers. And even though Floyd Mayweather was not a southpaw, he is the best boxer of all time. Debatable, but don't debate it with me. And they fought before when Floyd was like 33, 36 or some shit like that. And Floyd beat him pretty handily. Now imagine they were both.
Was young.
Canelo was 23. So he wasn't the Canelo that he is right now. He was not, you know, this physically dominant. He was at welterweight, so he was like in the 147 range instead of at 168. So he was lighter. But I mean, Floyd was older, so he still should have had power. I mean, there's no excuse. Like, if you could have did it, you would have did it, but you couldn't. And there's no reason to think that Floyd in his 20s would not have knocked your ass out like he did every other fighter. Like, Floyd loves fighting Mexican fighters because they come forward and he's a counterpuncher. And so he always catches them slipping because he's too fast. And he had power in his younger days. If it took you 8 rounds to get Billy Joe Saunders out of the ring, and some people say you split 4 of those rounds with him, you're never going to be ready for Floyd Mayweather. I actually think, and this is just me, if Canelo and Floyd Mayweather to fight today, it would go the distance, and it would probably be a win by split decision by either of them, and I would still put my money on Floyd. That's just me. You know what I'm saying? That's just me. I know you saw Floyd fight twice. What you think?
I didn't know much about Floyd in the first fight.
He's a god.
My first fight. And that Pacquiao fight was pretty, it wasn't exciting to me because it was a lot of ducking and dodging, dipping and everything like that. Like, fighting strategically, a lot of people, from what I gathered after the fight, were saying Floyd was running the whole time. Floyd was fighting scared. Floyd was just ducking, dodging, grabbing and everything like that. And I was like, and then afterward, but then I listened to some other people talking about, like, well, he's a defensive fighter. So at first I was like, oh, okay. I didn't know much about Floyd. I was like, huh. But then when people say he was a defensive fighter, I was like, so isn't that what he's supposed to do? I was confused. I was like, isn't he supposed to do? Like, people were like, yeah, but that's like a cowardly way to fight because he makes sure he doesn't get hit and he plays for the score or plays for something like that and wins like that. And I'm like, like he's fighting smart to me. Like, he's trying to a lasting career. He's not trying to get hit.
Not only is that fighting smart, it's Olympic style boxing. Meaning you're going like sorely off points in the Olympics because you wear a headgear. You can still knock somebody out, but it's hard. So, I mean, like, you really are playing the cards. But, I mean, Floyd in his 30s did not have punching power. So what's the point of being in there in a firefight and you know you're not going to knock the dude out? It's stupid. And the whole point of the game is to hit and not be hit. That's why you got people in wheelchairs that used to box now. People die, you know, in the rain from boxing. They can't wipe their own ass because they got hit in the head too fucking much. It's a fucking blessing that Mike Tyson can still walk around and still box at this age with the damage he's taking as a boxer. So people say that, know nothing about boxing for real. Like, it's entertaining to see, like, slugfest and shit, but the real skill is in what Floyd does and what Canelo does and what, I mean, having an offensive arsenal, I'm really getting choked up here. Having an offensive arsenal is impressive, but it leads you to no longevity. Because with one punch, everything can change, and you lose your belt. With the belt comes endorsements, and with endorsement comes some money. Mm-hmm. And that's why he's Money Mayweather.
Money Mayweather.
Let's get the basketball, man, before I fucking pass out in here, man. I'm struggling.
That's a bit. God dang, man. I wait. Like, y'all looking good right now. Y'all solid with. Y'all draft position and everything.
I think we're looking at getting like number three right now, depending on how the balls roll.
That's the best. Hey, in my opinion, that's the best spot to be.
Number three?
Yes, three or four. Because for some reason, and I'm going to go more in depth in this on the mock draft episode, but again, I've already discussed this in previous times. For some reason, people are discounting Jalen Green. My nigga Jalen Green came out with the tweets talking about, I know if I would have went to college, I would still have my number one spot and I would still be ranked like these other players. But because I didn't go that route, everybody is overlooking me. He said, that's cool. I'm not bothered by it. I'm just saying how I said, that's basically how it was. Like the gist of, he was saying, like, that's cool that y'all overlooking me, but I was number one for a reason.
And he's actually the best fit for the Thunder. I don't think he's the best player in the draft.
I do.
I mean, it's one of those time will tell things, right? Like, I think...
Well, it's also what you're looking for, too. Because Jalen Green, he matches the... He has that superstar potential, too, where you could... He could really explode. He could really explode.
So it's Cunningham.
Yeah, but Cunningham, a lot of the critiques on him was the same critiques Ben Simmons has. Not with the shot or anything, but the like being disinterested and not necessarily being great at one thing, but being really good at everything.
That's like a
He's a complete player. He's really good at a lot of things. And he is good. And I'm not hating on Cade Cunningham in any way, shape, or form. I definitely believe he's gonna be a star in this league. My thing is, like, I'm cool with Cade Cunningham being there. Like, if you want to say Cade Cunningham is one, Jalen Green two, Jalen Green one, Cade Cunningham two, I am cool with that. But where I draw the line is when they start talking about other guards going off the board before Jalen Green, a.k.a. Jalen Suggs. Why is he over Jalen Green? Can somebody tell me that?
Because he's a point
Can
guard.
Somebody tell me why he is over Jalen Green? It doesn't make any sense.
He's a point
People
guard.
Talk about... Huh?
He's a point guard.
I don't care. Jalen Green came out when he was in high school. He was listed as a point guard. Jalen Green, Cade Cunningham, and Suggs were all listed at point guard.
Stop, because Russell Westbrook was a shooting guard. So, do you think Jalen Green's... Oh, and I owe Russell Westbrook an apology. Do you think Jalen Green is a point guard in the NBA?
He's definitely a two guard. Okay. And if he is a point guard, if he's a point guard, he's a score first point guard. That's lethal. But that, and I'm cool. Okay, but I said a guard position. At the guard position, why is somebody else over? Why is Suggs over him? I just couldn't. Everyone I've asked, everyone talks about, like, oh, they talk about that shot he hit. And I'm like, that's cool. He's had a lot of, like, he's had a lot of good moments. He's also had a lot of bad moments. And I'm not hating on Suggs. I'm all for Suggs. I think Suggs is going to be cool. I think Suggs he's going to be an all-star. I don't think Suggs is going to be a superstar like Jalen Green.
So the thing about Jalen Green is Jalen Green can still bust. Suggs, and this isn't me advocating Suggs over Green. I'm just giving you, like, risk-averse decision-making. With Suggs, you know you're going to get transition play. He's fast as fuck. You know you're going
to Jalen Green's the most – like, he's potentially – he's a top two athlete in that draft.
Sir, this is a Wendy's. Calm the fuck down. I'm just giving you Suggs. I'm not comparing right now. I'm just telling you what I know I'm going to get. With Suggs, I know I'm going to get defense. I know I'm going to get transition play. I know I'm going to get at least a secondary ball handler. I know I'm going to get someone that can finish in the paint. And I know that's someone that can play off the ball or play on the ball. That's valuable in today's NBA. That's a combo guard.
You just described Jalen Green.
Wait. With the potential to be a league guard with the pedigree of playing in the NBA's farm system, which, prior to what they want you to believe, is not the G League, it's the NCAA. Because the G League is not produced talent that can compete.
Huh? Listen, hell no. I'm stopping you right there.
You were going to argue something that I have not said. Let me finish. If we can have 10 more words, and then you can go. I will give you the floor. Give me 10 more words, okay?
Go ahead.
Now let me back up.
Okay.
The G League itself is not producing the talent that will compete in the NBA. The G League harbors talent that's not ready for the NBA yet. That talent still comes from the NCAA. You understand? I'm not saying the G League does not have talent. I'm saying they are not the producer. This year was their first year doing like the G League select team shit. And they made maybe what? Maybe four people that go to the first round that's draft eligible, but that's not a farm system, that's a development system.
Okay, let me go here. Again, they're playing against pros. Think of how many players off a college team that they're playing on average, not when they play like Kentucky or anybody. On average, when they play a college team, most of their games, most of those players, 9 out of the 12 players are not even going to make it to the G League level. On average, on the other player, like I say, 8 or 9 of them not going to make it to that G League level. A handful of them will make it. Like you're going to have a couple that go to the NBA that can go play in the NBA. A couple that go overseas or go into the G League route, don't go undrafted, do something else. And then the rest of them are going to be 4-year players, graduate college, and then live a good life after that with their college degree and everything. And they can still say they play college-level basketball. Congrats to them. But they are not even on that G League level. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, they might not be playing. You might not be playing like a Cade Cunningham every game. But you're not playing a Cade Cunningham every game even when you play in the NCAA. You are playing better competition. So if you're playing on average from 1 to 15 – you're playing better competition in the G League because you could take the top college teams and put them in the G League, and the G League teams are still pros. Those G League players play college ball. Those G League players were legit in college. So let's not act like they're just not there. They're just like they're not good. So that's what I'm saying. The G League players are pro. They're still pro players.
Let me apologize to the Gatorade League. I apologize. My intent was not to.
Oh my God. So they're playing better competition. And I could understand if you said, let's say he played blah, 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 and he played subpar. I get what you're saying with the farm system. I'm saying, but it would make sense if he wasn't playing like good competition. You'd be like, okay, yeah, they're not producing people, but they still got pros there. But. Unlike, think about how many players go overseas and try. And I'm sorry for that. We had some technical difficulty. But as I was saying, in the G League, like you think about how many, or when people go overseas and they play, think of how they play and how everything like that. They come back in the draft and you see them. They have like subpar numbers. You like they have bad efficiency. They don't really put up too many numbers because they're playing pro level players. And you're like, oh, so their numbers usually, they're usually sitting on a bench or usually not putting up great numbers or anything like that. But Jalen Green went over there and a lot of people had doubts on how well he'd be able to play there. And he averaged 18, 4, and 3. Average a steal and a half and still like shot. Really, he didn't shoot like lethal from three, but he shot 36.5%, and that was the knock on him. People were like, we're not exactly sure because he's supposed to be one of the best scorers in this draft. Because like that's what Cade Cunningham has, the all-around game. Jalen Green is the elite like level scorer in this draft. So they're kind of like, okay, well, we don't know if his scoring is actually going to take place because, yeah, he's crazy athletic, but what if his three-pointer doesn't, like, you know, developing everything. He showcased that he can shoot the three. He showcased he can be poised, slow the game. He can do different things. And playing against pros and playing with pros and getting coached in that little development league, which is supposed to develop them and be ready for the NBA, I think he's going to come back into the – when he comes in, like, 5 years down, he's going to develop faster than Cade Cunningham and the rest of them. Like, 5 years into the thing – where he's at versus where they are, I predict he's going to be further along. That's just my opinion. I also believe if Jalen Green would have went to college, he would still be ranked the number one player coming out. It would be between him and Cade Cunningham. It wouldn't, like, Suggs wouldn't even be in that conversation. It would be him and Cade Cunningham. But it's, because he decided not to, it is what it is.
It's not
but
even pre-draft season right now, bro. He might still end up being the number one player. You never know.
Yeah, because we haven't even seen the workouts and everything, but that was just my thing. My whole thing is people are taken away from him. Like, people are, like, saying because he didn't play in the NCAA, he can't be where – I feel like this is how I feel. It's a prisoner of the moment thing.
They didn't have eyes, like, on him, man.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's a prisoner of the moment. You didn't have eyes on him. The G League games, they only streamed a couple of their games. It was, like, on, like, Twitch. So you had to watch it, and it was, like, a, like – 2 in the afternoon, most people are at work, so you only get to see clips and stuff like that. Like I said, that's what I was trying to say, the prisoner of the moment thing. A lot of people's draft, everyone knows, their draft, they shoot up during the NCAA tournament. You could play, like, whatever during a regular season, but if you play well in the NCAA tournament, people will be like, okay, that's what they remember you for, and they're going to be a prisoner of the moment, and that's where you're going to be. That's what I feel like a lot of this draft is, prisoner of the moment. Because think of Steph and Dame last year. Think of Steph and Dame last year. Do you remember when Dame was balling out and everything, and everybody was like, oh, I don't know if Steph can hoop like this. I don't know if Steph can shoot like this. Like, Dame really might be the best. Like, people were talking about Dame might be the best point guard. Dame might be the best shooter in the league. You remember all the talks. Everybody was chatting. They were prisoner at the moment because Steph was out and Dame was there. Steph came back and he struggled those first couple games, and people were like, oh, see, we told you Dame was better. Then Steph Curry had to remind niggas who the fuck he was, and that's what Jalen Green gonna do. He gonna remind everybody who he is. Trust me, I'm on the Jalen Green, like the Jalen Green train the whole way. I'm rocking with him the whole way. So if he ball out and he, like, turns out great, I'm rocking with him. If he turns out to a bust, I just was wrong. But I'm rocking with him the whole way. Put that on record. I'm saying Jalen Green gonna be the best player coming out of this draft. No doubt about it. That's where I'm putting it. I'm buying all the Jalen Green stock there is.
I really enjoy Junk Harrison on the podcast. It's like your old uncle side comes out, man. Like, this is like barbershop talk coming from you. I'm not used to it. You're normally so quiet and reserved.
I try to stay professional.
Jalen Greenstock got it. Hopefully he comes to OKC, man. I have this fear of, like, this. I have two fears, actually. First one is the most obvious one. The ball not bouncing our way and we getting, like, going to pick six. Because, like, the excitement drop off from, like, the top three picks to, like, the top six picks is, like, really drastic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because you go from Evan Mobley, Cade Cunningham, Suggs, Green, and them, like, to, yeah, like, Kuminga and them. Kuminga's still solid, but then you start going, like, other places.
Like, Moses Moody and shit. Like,
yeah. Yeah, like, players that could turn up, but they're probably going to be, like, a high-level role player. You need role players in it. Like,
we need a centerpiece. Yeah. Another centerpiece. I really like SGA, but another centerpiece.
Yeah, SGA is a hooper.
Yeah. So what I think about SGA, and I think I said this before, is if he could take a step back from scoring, I think it'll help his progression as a point guard. Because he has to do too much, and he's handling it well. But I think he's a high level. I think he's, like, a high level B player than, like, a superstar. I think he's a star. I just don't think he could post to be a superstar. But who am I to limit his potential, man? If you want to go be great, bro, go do that, man. You got my full support over here. But yeah, man. And my second fear is, like, we get, like, a top three or four pick, and then Presti is like, nah, more tanking. And then we trade that shit for, like,
I can see that. More assets. He's got to get more assets.
But see, it almost defeats the purpose of the tank to do that, because you're trading for future picks, but you don't know what a team would, like, one, if they pick a cornerstone player, they may not be picking this high again. So then that future pick is not going to be a lottery pick, most likely. It's going to probably be like a low-level lottery, or you're going to be in the 20s or some shit. Like, it's going to be – I'll be depressed. But here's another thing before we go. So we talked about the G League and, like, the exposure issues. You mentioned them playing on Twitch and shit. I know they play some games on ESPN+. My concern isn't really about where they show the games at, it's who they playing. I feel like the G League games would be more interesting if they play overseas competition.
I agree there. I want to see them play, like, smaller competition, because they're necessarily, they'd have to start with somewhere like how Mexico has pro teams in it. They have their own pro league on there. I would like them to reach out and start playing that level competition just to see how it goes. You know, just a little trial, play a couple teams and everything, add them, incorporate them into the season just to see other pro teams, and then be like, okay, cool. And then eventually try to go, you know, with the Euro leagues whenever they build up. You know, the Euro league is the second best league in basketball, so it's hard to just get there. Exactly. Even though there's different levels to it and everything, you'll probably have to play on one of the smaller levels and everything with that. That's all cool and stuff, but that's going to be more difficult because that's going to involve a lot more travel, because you got to think that's overseas traveling. So if they're playing over in the States and then they got to travel overseas to play a game, that's kind of more difficult. So I think they'll have to start off with, like,
it don't got to be for a whole season, like just like almost like a tournament tip, like just pick, like, all right, month of December, we're making a run of Europe. And we're just going to schedule mad. You call it expedition games, whatever the fuck you want to call them. We're just going to schedule mad games. And we're going to see how our talent stack up to their talent. And then from there, you can gather data and just kind of figure out whether they would benefit more from playing that level of competition or just playing the NBA call downs that they play, you know, stateside.
Yeah, I'm with it. I'm all for it. I think it'd be a unique look into it, and I think it'll bring in a lot more fans into it, because I've gone to a couple G League games and it wasn't all that. Actually, I went to a G League game, and that's when I saw Seth Curry play for the first time. He was on the Warriors G League team, and I got to see him hoop. It was cool seeing him in person and everything. But going into those games, like, the stands are so empty. Like, no disrespect to WNBA games, because I rock with the WNBA as well, but the WNBA stands are empty and the G League stands are empty, and it felt like a WNBA game because, like, we were sitting in, like, the mid-level, but the bleachers are kind of like a high school's bleachers, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So where you can just walk down to the bottom. So we were sitting in the mid-level, but you look 10 rows in front of us, there's not a single soul. So we just scooted up, and we were just like, nobody's here anyway. We scooted up, went all the way to, like, damn near courtside and just sat there. Because, like, nobody's in there. Like, nobody was there. And this was – you still look at those games now, it's like there's nobody there. Yeah. So I think that would bring exposure to the league, playing those overseas teams or playing anything like that, like those little tournaments, because you have their fan base there just to see how they play against the Americans. And, like, even though it's a smaller tier of Americans, you still see how they play. And you could bring – that could be a selling point over here, because we're like, oh, we get to see so-and-so play them or X, Y, and Z. Like, there just needs to be another way for them to bring in revenue and bring in fans into the G League. Yeah. Because otherwise nobody's going to want to really watch those games. And they're going to stay how it is.
Yeah, the same way that the NBA, like, players try and promote, like, the WNBA and shit. Shout out to them for doing that. And the same way they should be promoting the G League shit. And, I mean – It's some good level competition going on down to those games. I watched a couple on ESPN+, and I mean, it's good shit. It's just, I never know when they fucking play, and I gotta stumble across it, and that's just the problem. But yeah. I hopefully with, like, this select team shit, like, when we see more high profile players go down there, like, we'll want to watch those games just to see, like, you know, the young crop of exciting players play. I think if LaMelo had went to the G League,
it would have blew up.
That would have been some shit. They got to catch somebody like that's got, like, a following of, like,
Yeah, that's what they thought they were getting with Jalen Green, but Jalen Green wasn't the – he doesn't have that appeal that LaMelo had. As like, he was the number one player, but he nobody really – you know, they're not rocking with him like that. Like the number one player in high school, like the number one senior, Chet. Nobody's – like, heck, he's the number one player in high out of all the seniors. But if he were to go to the G League, they'd be like, oh, yeah, the number one player back-to-back years going to the G League. Nobody would really care because his fan base isn't there. If somebody like Imani Bates went, or Mikey Williams, or Bronny, or somebody like that, like a big name, they don't have to be the highest ranked. Like Bronny's not the highest ranked. He's not that highly ranked. I think he fell out of the top, like, 25 now because when he got hurt. And so you get a name like that, just the name alone is going to bring fans in. So you get somebody like that, I feel like they'll be straight. Like when LiAngelo was supposed to play for the OKC Blue, but then that was when COVID happened and the season got cut short. There was people like raving over on social media. People were like, we want to see him. We want to see like Jello play. But obviously COVID happened, so we didn't get to see him play.
I was not one of those people.
He was OKC Blue. He was going to ball out over there, and OKC was going to bring him up to the main squad. We're going to be out there. He's going to be out there shooting that thing, being, you know, going to be there, man. Y'all not. He said, no, he wasn't.
Nah.
I mean, hey, y'all want to bring in more fans, especially since y'all tanking anyway. Y'all should have brought Jello in just to be out there.
Them OKC fans is loyal, bro. They going to fill out the stadium regardless.
Yeah,
that's
true.
They love them players.
Yeah, so. But damn, I'm actually still getting tired, so I'm about to go ahead and cut this off. We can come back next time. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Ath Geeks Podcast. Always, always, always remember to respect women, respect the queens out there. We love y'all. We always gonna rock with y'all, support y'all. But most importantly, remember to respect yourself. 'Cause simping ain't pimping.